Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Massage Therapy Radio. I'm your host, Jim Smythe, and tonight's topic is Even Better Business Agreements, resolving the greatest problems in massage working agreements. Tonight's seminar is brought to you by Know Your Body Best, our sponsor. You can hear replays of past shows by visiting massagetherapyradio.com. Business agreements between clinics owners and practitioners are fraught with high turnover, unsustainable financial terms, substandard performance, broken relationships, and hard feelings. In Even Better Business Agreements for Massage Therapists, Don Dillon builds upon his International Selling Companion volume and directly addresses common beliefs that hamstring good business agreements. Mr. Dillon presents a better model for both clinic owner and practitioner to reduce turnover, increase workplace satisfaction, and tackle the biggest problems in massage practitioner working agreements. Welcome to the show, Don.
Jim, thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's great to have you here. And we're going to go right to the meat of the matter. What's this new program all about?
Well, Jim, when I wrote Better Business Agreements back, published in 2007, I had written it because I was traveling across Canada speaking and writing, and I was hearing from a number of both clinic owners and practitioners about problems that they were having in their Better Business Agreements. And these agreements were often a contractor-client relationship where it was really a loosely committed relationship, not expected to go long-term. And the contractor and the clinic owner basically had a relationship where the contractor was renting space. They would come and work for a while, and then they would leave. There was a lot of turnover problems. So I wrote the book to discuss that issue and to point out some of the legal considerations that would make contracts stronger. We talked about the costs of running a business from the clinic owner's perspective. And I felt that, and the book has sold quite well. It's sold in Canada and the U.S., and also we've had a few orders from Australia. But there was a piece of the puzzle that was missing. And especially given now with the rise of large spas and massage franchises, I think we're going to see a greater move toward an employer-employee relationship. So this new book, Even Better Business Agreements, is a companion volume that goes further with the insights that I've gleaned from teaching this material abroad and discussing with many therapists about the problems that that occur. One of the primary problems, of course, is that the practitioner, the contracting practitioner, feels largely out of control in terms of how much money they make, and that's where some of the contention starts. So this second book is going to delve into more how the practitioner, or in this case the employee, can have greater control over their income. Some of the primary problems for the clinic owners we've talked about include retaining productive practitioners, identifying and eliminating unproductive practitioners, preventing a loss of business intelligence and client base. The problem that usually a chunk of that business tends to go down the road, and clinic owners try to avoid that. And, of course, they also try to earn a return on investment for the risk that they've taken in setting up the business in the first place. Some of the primary problems for practitioners out there are getting established, trying to grow their business, trying to protect their relationship equity that they build in the practice while working at this location, earning a fair wage after their business rent has been paid, and, of course, managing the things that are not the hands-on providing care, which are the promotional and administrative aspects of practice. So there's problems inherent in the contractor-client relationship. It's designed to be short-term. There's not a loyal relationship set up. And most massage therapy agreements, given the complaints I've heard from clinic owners and practitioners, we need relationships that are longer-term and have a higher trust component. Many practitioners would like to focus on providing care and not have to worry about the marketing and the administrative aspects. Many clinic owners would like to have practitioners stay on indefinitely, providing management services to them in exchange for the practitioner continuing to provide ongoing care to the people that would frequent the clinic. These short-term one-night stands and the transientness we have in the profession right now, I think, hurt our profession. It makes us look immature and uncommitted. So this new program looks at creating an employer-employee-based relationship, which inherently builds longer-term trust-based relationships into the equation. What's more, again, it puts the control of earnings largely into the employee's hands. I believe that the number one problem that practitioners complain about is not that the leasing the space is too high, but the practitioners don't know how to maximize their income potential with the business model they've been using.
Well, that's quite a mouthful, Don.
Yeah. There's been a lot to say over the years.
So can you highlight specifically some of the benefits for an employer, for example?
Yes. As I had mentioned, in the contractor-client relationship, really this kind of relationship works in a short-term relationship like a locum if somebody's covering for maternity leave, or if you have a seasonal business where you have a situation where you need a lot of practitioners at a resort, for example, over the summer, then short-term contractor-client agreements can work very well. But if you want a longer-term relationship, if the clinic owner wants to be able to get a return on their investment early on into that practitioner, if the practitioner doesn't want to be bouncing around, they really want to establish themselves in a location, then there are a lot of reasons to look at an employer-employee business contract. So, for example, the employer-employee business contract would provide more security for workers. Pension plans, unemployment insurance, vacation pay, health and dental benefits for their self and family, these are things that contractors would have to pay out of pocket for, and often at much higher premiums that can be gotten in a group practice. So an employer-employee relationship would give more security to those practitioners that are employed in the business. A second example are productivity incentives and sales commissions. I think that clinic owners, oftentimes they'll offer the same deal to every one of the practitioners, and some of those practitioners will be very productive, and some of those won't be, but they'll all have the same deal. So the problem you get is that the unproductive practitioners will be blaming some reason that they're not busy, and the productive ones will say, well, how come I'm paying the same rent as this person and I'm doing much better? And they start to look down the street for a different opportunity. So I think you should pay your productive workers more, and you can increase the opportunity for them generating income with sales commissions. If you're in a spa, then they could sell the various spa products. If you're in a rehab setting, there's a number of things that can be sold as products that augment or complement the treatment. Give them an opportunity to generate sales through their commissions. I think if you have an incentive process in place, that the rewards or incentives should be overt and generous and worthwhile. And I think that this changes the shift from where right now a practitioner, if they're not making enough money, they tend to blame the clinic owner. Well, the clinic owner is charging me too much money, and that's why I'm not making enough to get by. But if you put in these incentives and opportunities for sales commissions, then instead of blaming the owner for poor wages, the practitioner now will recognize that they themselves hold the power over their own income. A third reason are efficiencies. There are a number of things that can be done much better in a group practice than as a sole proprietor. Marketing and administration, for example, can be handled much better when you have when you're repeating the process, and maybe you have somebody in the office like a receptionist or a marketer is hired to help who can do all of this stuff instead of a sole practitioner trying to do it all themselves. You're also more the group practice is also much better able to respond to crisis. For example, with the H1N1 we talked about in North America last year, just preparing for epidemics and things like that, it's much easier as a group practice to make a plan on how to respond in case of an emergency as opposed to a sole practitioner. And, of course, professional development. I mean, larger clinics and businesses, especially massage franchises, can commission experts to come in and speak on a particular topic, and instead of having to fly everybody to the expert, they can bring the expert in to help them develop professionally. So there are many efficiencies that can be gained by having the more secure employer-employee relationship. There's also an aspect of practitioner retention and satisfaction. when the practitioner has all these support systems in place, when the administration is being done for them and the marketing is being done for them and they don't have to worry about that, when the supplies are provided and the snow is shoveled and the office is kept clean, all of these things increase the retention of the practitioner, increase the likelihood that they're going to want to stay. Because with all these support systems and the incentives and the benefit plans in place, good practitioners will be hard-pressed to leave. They really will want to stay working in this kind of organization, especially if they've worked in a situation before where they were renting space and they were really on their own. And I think one of the forgotten benefits of an employer-employee relationship is that at some point the clinic owner is going to want to retire. They're going to want to scale down their practice or something's going to change in their life. So they need a business succession plan, and oftentimes a practitioner will put their business up for sale and they'll try to find a buyer, and there are many cases where they have trouble finding a buyer because it's hard to pass on that goodwill when you have been the business and you've treated those patients or clients. It's hard to pass on that goodwill to another individual. But if that individual has been working with you long term, if the clients or patients of the facility are familiar with that individual, then that individual may be a prime candidate to eventually become a partner to help you expand the business or even to buy the business from you down the road. So there are a number of excellent benefits that an employer-employee contract or agreement would have over a less committed contractor-client relationship.
Those are five very good points, Don. In fact, I keep a transition articles file myself for my clinic just because I have to work towards that eventually.
Oh, good for you.
Yep. And while I have this opportunity, I'd like to remind everybody that they can go to the website, massagetherapyradio.com, and click on this event. And when you get to the Welcome to Better Business Agreement screen, you can submit any questions you have in the box at the bottom left-hand corner. So if you have any questions, just type them in at the bottom left-hand corner where it says Q&A, and we will answer as many questions as we can as we get towards the end of the interview. Now, but isn't it true, Don, that a therapist can make more money when they work for him or herself?
Well, I've been looking at this over the last while. I've been looking at both the U.S. and Canadian statistics, and I think there's a lot of misconceptions about what kind of income a massage therapist makes. In the massage therapy census of 2003 that was conducted by the College of Massage Therapists of Ontario, 43% of therapists said that their income did not meet their expectations. And in fact, it was a $20,000 difference between what they had hoped to make and what they actually made. And greater than 50% of those reported that they made less than $30,000 in a year. I looked at the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics from May 2008, and the median wage for a massage therapist or massage practitioner was $16.78 an hour, or about $34,900 per year. I think the practitioners tend to see the gross and not the net. They don't realize that there's a cost to risking their savings, their capital, and opening a business in the first place. And there's ongoing costs in marketing and administration and a variety of other things. If you're going to open your own business, you essentially have to earn an MBA in your experience. And, of course, that's going to cost tens of thousands of dollars in terms of your learning curve to try and master opening a business. These costs must be factored in, and in many cases a larger business can scale these costs and provide efficiencies sole practitioners cannot match. I think what's really interesting is if you look at the minimum wage in the U.S. and Canada, which in the U.S. it's about $7.75, in Canada it's $9.50 an hour, and if you look at people with college programs, then that wage raises to about $15 to $20 an hour. And then, of course, if you go for higher education, university level, then it can go higher than that. And I'm surprised that a lot of practitioners have the sense that they're going to make $50 or $60 an hour doing this work, when really it's not commensurate with what we see in other industries in terms of people having private vocational training or college-level training. so I think the practitioners come out, the fees are set a certain level, they figure that's how much they're going to make, but when you take into account all of the expenses, what's left at the end of the day, it's not how much you make, but how much you keep. What's left at the end of the day is actually much less than a lot of practitioners expect. So established practitioners may make more money on their own, but they're also more vulnerable to market changes, like we've seen with the economic changes in North America in the last couple of years. There are a lot of competitive services out there who are fighting to provide, to fight for dollars to solve your problems, whether it be stress or pain or strain. And, of course, the practitioner has to do all the business operations when they work for themselves. They have to not just provide care, but they have to manage all the business operations on their own. So for new practitioners who are non-established and have little or no business experience, becoming employed in an established business makes a lot of sense. And as an employee, you really have to consider that with minimal risk, I mean, the clinic owner is the one that's taking all the risk. They're the one that have signed the lease agreements. They're the one that have made the capital investments. They put all that money out there in marketing and building goodwill and reputation and location. But an employee with relatively minimal risk can maximize their income by increasing their value as an employee, by specializing in some aspect of body work, which would then make them more valuable, more marketable. They could raise their fees. If they learned how to sell and sell products that were available that complemented their treatments, they would build commission on that. And also, if they showed value to the business in general by having high retention or having an ability through public education sessions or going out in the community and bringing a lot of business in, the business owner, come contract time, will tend to negotiate a better wage for that individual because they're much more productive. So, yes, practitioners can make more money on their own, but it seems like if they consider all the aspects of running their own business, there are a lot of these employees that are making just as much or even more than individuals that are working for themselves.
I think I would agree. I was just on the web today, and I subscribe to Google Alerts, which I believe you do as well, Don. And I was looking at a woman, a massage therapist in New York region, and she was talking about how her business has dropped off over the past year. She's a single therapist working on her own. So she's struggling to bring in new business. So you're right. You know, the larger you are, the more money that's pooled, the more things you can do with it.
Yes, and I think that, and Jim, you have a large clinic as well. You know that as the economy changes, I think that these larger institutions will have a market advantage.
I think you're right. And
yeah.
Speaking of large institutions, massage franchises are seeming to open up in Canada. I know they've got a big foothold in the States. What do you think about them, and can you tell us a little bit about them?
Well, I probably reacted like most others. I was quite concerned about what the franchise model would mean for the massage therapy industry. And I think franchises are going to provide mainstream exposure in high traffic areas. They have established administration and promotional systems and ongoing marketing campaigns. So they're going to attract a lot of attention and a lot of traffic to themselves. The practitioners that work out of these franchises can just focus on providing care, and they really leave the rest to the franchise management team. Everything else is taken care of. And there are a lot of these franchises that are doing good. Massage Envy, a well-known franchise in the U.S., for example, is contributing resources back into the profession, and they reward their high performers very well. So I think that franchises will be very effective in bringing massage to the masses. I think the fear of franchises comes from the idea of commoditization or cookie-cutting massage. It's the idea that one size will fit all, like McDonald's, for example. It's a circumstance of the popularity of massage that larger corporations will want to cash in on that popularity with all these standardized services. There is a danger to many sole practitioners because they won't be able to compete in terms of marketing savvy or commercial exposure compared to the franchises. So those practitioners will certainly be facing some challenges. However, I think the franchises will not replace the specialists in our field or those who have established relationships with their clients or patients. If you already have years of developed relationship and you're keeping people healthy and well that you're treating, it's unlikely that they're going to want to stray because that relationship is very important to them. So if you're a sole practitioner, you will have to work hard at maintaining solid relationships with your client patient base. It won't be as easy as in the past where massage became very popular through the 70s and 80s with athletics and running and increased income levels, disposable income levels, generous extended health care benefits and work injury benefits. All of those things help to grow the massage therapy field. But things are changing now. Things are becoming much tighter. The healthcare dollars are squeezed much tighter. Disposable income has been attacked with more taxation and other costs as well. So it's going to become much harder, I think, for the sole practitioner to maintain their, if they've just been sort of going along status quo, it's going to be much harder. You really have to focus on your specialization and the special relationship you have with your clients or patients, and you have to keep working on that. You can't get lazy about it.
Well, I would agree. You can't get lazy any time in our lives. But in this particular profession, you can never get lazy. Now, Don, we've only got about 10 minutes left in our program, so I think maybe we'll go to a few questions from the audience, if you don't mind.
Sure, yeah.
I have a question from Victoria in New Brunswick. And the question is, how do I stop an original agreement of decreased pay for treatment? She's saying that 5 months ago I agreed to accept $10 from a patient for treatment for 45 minutes simply to calm her Lyme's disease frenzy. Now I am looking to increase the charge simply because we were hoping to have confirmation of insurance coverage by now, or that she would be willing to pay more. Now what? After stating it, I of course know, but your assistance could help. How does she approach someone that she's agreed to do a series of treatments for a period of time at a lesser rate, and now she has to increase the rate because she has to make a living?
That's a good question, Victoria. It sounds like you made an original agreement to help somebody who had a particular disease, Lyme's disease, and you had agreed to, if I'm understanding correctly, agreed to reduce your rates in order to provide care. Now, I'm imagining that you would have set a particular time period where that would have happened. If you didn't at the time, if it was such that you said, this is the fee that we'll charge and then we'll revisit it later, I would just suggest being honest to say, this is my posted fee schedule, and you should have your fee schedule, of course, posted in clear view in your clinic so that everybody knows what your fees are. And just explain the situation that you had provided an amount of care, that it's not plausible for you to continue to provide care. And so we need to now revisit this topic, and I still want to be able to help you with this issue, but we need to revisit this topic so that I can be properly compensated. It's just like any relationship in your life. When it's not working, you need to sit down and have a one-on-one talk and express your feelings and your concerns and take it to the other person and ask them what they think should be done. Oftentimes, the other person will be very generous and supportive and say, yes, I can understand why it's difficult, and let's just raise your fees back to what you charge everybody else.
Sounds fairly reasonable. Now we have a question from Josh in San Diego. Josh says that he has one massage therapist working for him as a private contractor. And Josh started her out at 60% commission plus tip, and now feels, though, that maybe it is a little too much considering all of the scheduling he has to do, the advertising, the laundry. He's wondering what the industry standard is and what is the best way to decrease her commission to a 50-50 split? Should I even reduce her pay is his question as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very tough question.
Yes,
I'm
Josh,
glad you have to answer.
Josh, thanks for that question. And I can tell you that this is a common thing that happens to clinic owners. And I have to say that most of the emails I get are not from practitioners complaining they're paying too much rent. Most of the complaints I get are from clinic owners who were told that there was a certain percentage in the field that they should go with, and so they went with that. They didn't sit down with their accountant and look at the financial particulars and realize that they're actually paying more money to work from their business than their associates are. So this is quite common, and it's a contentious issue in the profession, and one reason why, really the main reason I wrote the original book on business agreements was try to get clinic owners to realize they were digging themselves a deep hole, and they needed to change the way that they were doing things, and to also educate the contracting practitioners that it costs a lot to run a business. They really have to be considerate of the amount that it costs to run a business, and it has to be a fair split. So what I did, and I made the same mistake that you did, I had a certain percentage, examine the numbers. I wouldn't look at the numbers for years. I thought it was just something I had to do differently. Finally, I looked at the numbers, and I sat down, and over time, I presented some graphs and some information to the associates. I said, this isn't working. I have to change the way things are working, and had a meeting with them, talked to them directly about my concerns, shared with them what it cost me to run the business every month, and in the end, they signed on. They realized that I couldn't continue to run the business. Your practitioners rely as much on your business as you do for it to keep running. And they realize that if the boat's got a leak in it, then they can't stay on the boat. The boat's going to sink. So to encourage you, I would say, first of all, you ask about an industry standard. There is no industry standard. I would suggest you start with calculating what your operating costs are and build in a profit margin as well, because you do need to make a profit margin. You're risking taking on a business. You do have to save for expansion and contingency. So work that all out, figure that calculation out, and then sit down and discuss with this individual what you need to make in the room. Now, in the original Better Business Agreements, I outline, if you're not making enough money, there's ways to utilize a clinic room where you could have two therapists in there sharing and maximizing the space, and there's some other strategies. So I'll refer you back to the Better Business Agreements book. But I would say the first step is to sit down, figure out financially, sit with your accountant, figure out how much it's costing you to run your business, how much it's costing you to rent out the room that your associate is using. Sit down and have a one-to-one discussion about what you need to make in that room, and ask her for her advice and her thoughts about what can be done. And it's something that it'll probably take more than one meeting. You'll have to sit and talk about things and work through them. But eventually, the goal is that you find find an agreement that is going to work for both of you. Your last part about should you even reduce her pay? Well, you know, Josh, if you're losing money on this, if it's actually costing you money to have an associate, you've got to do something. You've got to change something.
Good response, Don. Now, I'm not sure if you can answer this question, but this is from Denise in Pennsylvania, it looks like. Is there a concern for myself as an independent contractor paying a chiropractor a percentage for the rental of the space in their office? Concerning meaning, is it legal? Now, I'm not sure if you can answer that because it's stateside, Don.
Well, I don't know what the laws are in Pennsylvania, if there are some restrictions in terms of kickbacks or a percentage agreement where the chiropractor is benefiting directly from the massage therapist. So, Denise, you're going to have to check with your local bylaws or with your chapter of the American Massage Therapy Association or whatever association you belong with. Check with them in terms of the bylaws and the legal aspects. But I can tell you in other areas, other states and the provinces, usually there's a flat rate agreement or a percentage agreement. So certainly percentages are often used in the equation. So it's quite common. And as far as I know, across Canada, there are no regulations that do not permit a percentage agreement.
Okay. Thanks for making that attempt, Don. Now, I'm going to say half hour has passed, and it is 8:30, but if you're comfortable with continuing, Don, I'm going to get you to field a couple more questions, and then we'll go to a closing deposition by you.
Sure, be happy to.
Okay. I have Catherine in Ontario, and she's stating that she has her associates on a 60-40 split, which includes everything, linen, company, lotions, decorated and furnished rooms, phone, internet, debit. Looks like she does everything, and the clients in an established clinic. She feels that this is quite fair, but is often being asked for more. Is this an average fair split? Is she better off to have them on a flat rate? There's two very tough questions.
Well, Catherine, I and you can see that there's a common theme in a lot of these questions. There's really people are reaching to find out, is there a standard? Is there something that I can grab onto? And I would suggest that I noticed that you said that you feel this is quite fair. So I'm wondering if mathematically, accounting-wise, if you've worked it out to make sure that you're making a fair return, you're covering all your expenses, and you're making a return, a profitable margin on taking the risk for opening a business in the first place. Because you've, as a clinic owner, you're taking a risk and providing opportunity for other practitioners, so you should be paid for taking that risk, as well as building up a contingency fund for emergencies and for preparing for expansion if eventually down the road you want to move into a larger space or do something greater as well. So I would suggest that you get clear on those numbers first, and I would always encourage clinic owners to share that. If it costs you $1,000 a month with the expenses and your profit margin built in to rent a room, if you've got two treatment rooms and each room costs $1,000, then I would say this is what it costs me to run my business. The practitioners may want to refer back to the Better Business Agreements book where I outline all the different expenses that are included in running a business. A lot of time practitioners don't recognize how much it actually costs to run the business. So get clear on your accounting first. And then you might want to just have a meeting and ask them, what is it that they feel is unfair, or why do they feel the percentage is not adequate? Oftentimes, it's not that the rent is too expensive. In fact, in my experience, clinic owners actually undercharge the rent. What often the problem is that practitioners don't know how to make more money in the existing model that they have. They've learned a one-hour massage in school, and they've applied that. A lot of practitioners charge $10, $15, $20 less than the recommended fee schedule by their professional association. And the hour massage was really designed in the spa model, where the spas are charging, you know, $120 an hour. So if you're charging $65 an hour or $60 an hour, you're only charging half what the spas are. You're still working the same amount of time, putting the same amount of resources, and yet you're making much less. So a lot of these practitioners need to raise their fees. They need to raise their skill levels so that they add value. They need to have other avenues for raising income, like sales commissions for products that are available in the clinic, for example. Or they need to find ways that they can use modalities. If you're in a spa, then using the body wraps or the thermal palms or some of those products in order to be able to treat people, then your hands-on time is reduced in the session from 60 minutes or 55 minutes to, say, 40 minutes, 35 minutes, then you can treat a couple more people in a day. So those are all ways to generate your income. So maybe what the issue is not that the rent is too much, but they just don't know how to generate more income given their model. So, Catherine, start with your accounting. Find out what it costs you to run your business. And in the Better Business Agreements book, I talk about taking a look at, if you have two treatment rooms, figure out your total expenses, add a profit margin in, split it down the middle so that you know how much you have to make for each treatment room, and then go back with your individuals and ask them why they feel that the rent is unfair. You'll have your accounting with you. I often recommend clinic owners bring their accountant with them if they're meeting with two or more associates, so it doesn't feel like an us versus them thing, so that the accountant can clearly explain those are the operating costs. And then talk to them about ways maybe that they can generate more income have more control, have more power over the income they generate, rather than looking at you and saying, wow, you're charging me too much rent. That's why I'm not making enough money here. How was that, Jim?
That's very good, Don. We also now have a question from Melissa in St. Catharines.
St. Catharines.
Your neck of the woods.
Yeah.
Right now, this person runs a clinic and rents space for $800 a month to three contractors. It covers the rent and bills, but no advertising and maintenance fees. So it doesn't cover rent, bills, or maintenance fees. And those can be costly, Alyssa says. She's wanting to do something about her current arrangements with her subleasers and help provide her with a stable income for the future without losing the current subleasers or changing things for them too much. Do you have any suggestions?
Well, again, Alyssa, a common theme that we're coming across here is a lot of these numbers seem to be decided without sitting down with our accountant first and deciding what it actually costs us to run this business and what and to make sure that we make a profit margin as the clinic owner and manager. As you're doing all these things, the advertising, the maintenance, all of these little details you're taking care of, and you're not being paid for it. So you need to work out a proper financial model first to make sure that you're drawing a management salary for the work you're doing and for the risk you're taking, as well as covering all of those expenses. And then I would, again, sit down with all of the leasers and describe what it costs you to run the business, what each treatment room you have. You said you have three contractors. I don't know if you have three treatment rooms, but what does it cost per room to run those businesses, to operate those rooms? And then look at ways that you can make things work. If some individuals are just starting out and they're not making enough money and it's very difficult for them, then you can look at maximizing the room by renting it to two people. So, for example, a therapist could have it from 8 to 2 in the 8 in the morning till 2 in the afternoon. The one in the afternoon could have it from 3 to 9. Really, therapists can only treat so many people in a day. It's very physically demanding. So you can maximize that room, and then the rent allotted to each of those individuals will be less, and it'll be less strenuous for them. I'll have to tell you that there's a lot of bad information in the industry right now. I read on Facebook and other aspects that these practitioners are screaming blue murder if they have to pay any more than 25-30% of their income. They feel that they're being ripped off. There's a lot of bad information out there. And unfortunately, there's also a lot of what we call in the retail business lost leaders, where you have chiropractors who are just as accounting stuck as we are, not looking at the numbers, and as well maybe or just have massage because they're just trying to get people in the door. The massage is an attraction, but they don't care if they make money on it. Just like Walmart sends you a flyer for a toaster that they're giving you for $10, and they're not making any money on it. They're selling it at cost, but what they hope is that the flyer will bring you into the store, and then you'll spend $150 on other stuff where the profit margins are much higher. So you're competing with that kind of challenge. But I want to encourage you that if you're losing money right now, if it's costing you money to take on this risk, to provide all of this, then it's just not worth it. You would be better off just working for someone else than taking that kind of risk, because if those contractors leave or something shifts dramatically, you're the one that's holding the bag. So it may be difficult, but I can tell you from personal experience, and Jim, I know that you've worked on this in your clinic, is that when you get clear on the numbers, and you sit down and you tell them what financially the clinic needs to make and outline all of the services that you're providing them, services that they would have to pay for themselves if they were operating their own business. Start with that conversation, and then it may take several meetings. You may want to involve mediators if things get hot, but eventually you will have an agreement that you can live with, and that's most important. The worst thing that I would hate to see for practitioners is that after years of their blood, sweat, and tears of operating this clinic and providing this opportunity for these practitioners, that they themselves end in a pool of debt. The practitioners have moved down the street, taking all that business with them. It's a sad story that happens far too often.
So now I'm going to give you a question from the other side, Don. Kim from Fredericton needs to leave a practice that she just joined. Due to events beyond her control, the person who runs the practice is now asking much more for rent than originally agreed upon. Plus, apparently, the promised referrals are not coming through. This person, Kim, does not want to be mean, but the reality is she doesn't think that the clinic owner is able to meet her rates anymore, can afford to have her on there. And the question is, how should she handle this?
Well, Kim, and again, another common theme here is that when we build relationships, we're really hoping to build a personal aspect. It's not just a financial relationship. Kim, you're concerned about being mean, but it sounds like this relationship is really not working for you. Just as in a personal relationship, if you were connected with someone and then they started to change things around without consulting you, you'd be quite upset. Same thing happens in the business agreement. I think from we'll look at this question from a number of aspects. Legally, if you've signed a business agreement, you'll have to look and see what the agreement says. If this person is charging you more rent than originally agreed upon, then you can bring that to her attention, have a meeting, and discuss why now she's asking for more rent. Also, you need to be aware of if there's a non-solicitation or non-competition clause. If she's signed you where you can't work within a certain radius, apparently from consultation with my lawyer, and I would encourage you to check other massage therapy radio programs we've had in the past. I did have my lawyer on one of our shows, Leanne Standrick, so take a chance to go back and listen to that preview. But she said that it's hard to stick sometimes these non-competition clauses because the contractor needs to make a living, so sometimes courts feel that they're onerous, but sometimes they do hold them up, especially if they're pretty clear and they're tight. So you have to see if you are precluded from working in the surrounding area based on this agreement. I'm imagining you said you just joined. Maybe there's a three-month clause where both parties can agree to get out. That's always a good clause to have in an agreement, is that you've got 3 months to try it out. If it's not working, either party can sever the contract immediately. But the bottom line is you said you can't afford these new rates, so you need to sit down with her and find out where she's coming from. Maybe she's just realized that that's what it costs her to run the business. So there are a number of things that you could suggest. Perhaps you could work there just half a shift instead of a full day, so you could cut back on the rent that you would owe. Maybe you need to look at other ways in terms of operating that would allow you to generate more income or give you more time to build up a practice. Maybe she needs to give you more flexibility to help you build up to the level. Something that I often recommend is the first year might be a percentage agreement with a cap and a base. The cap ensures that the practitioner has a ceiling where if they do really well, if they're productive, then they keep everything above the ceiling. That's very attractive for a lot of practitioners because there's an incentive there. And there's also a base level so that if the practitioner doesn't produce, the clinic owner is not left on the hook for the operating expenses. They're still getting some money toward that. So I outline that quite in detail in the Better Business Agreements book. But if you have a first year with a percentage, cap and a ceiling, and then the first 3 months are a trial to see if it works out for both parties, and then at 1 year, the clinic owner and the practitioner can decide to stay on a percentage or to move to a flat rate. And if you're a very productive practitioner, contractor, then the flat rate actually works very well. But I would say, like in any relationship, point out the logistics side, the numbers, the accounting, the facts that she has raised the rent now far beyond what she had said initially that she would. And then look at the personal side. Express your regrets and how things have gone. Express your concern about how this has really affected the trust between the two of you if she's going to be changing these parameters around. So approach it from both the logical and the emotional side. Sit down, have a conversation, look over your agreement, find out what you're implicated for, and then, you know, maybe this can be fixed. Maybe this person, the person renting, just You know, a colleague told her that she needed to change things, or the accountant told her she needed to change things, and she just acted in a panic. She didn't think properly. So I would say start with the relationship first and see how things go from there.
That's a very good response, Don.
Thank you.
And now I'm going to ask you this one final question from the audience. A very tough question.
Okay.
What is the fair percentage of commission for an employee?
A fair percentage of commission for employee. Well, I think that would vary. The spa industry, I think, would probably already have parameters in place. The rehab side of things may have as well. I'm not aware of a standard commission. I know salespeople in other areas tend to make anywhere from 5% to 15% in other industries. So that is an excellent question, and I think it's probably worth, if we had an online discussion on Facebook or one of the other mediums available to massage therapists, to start finding out what a fair commission would be. That's a very good question.
Okay, Don, we've been on the
Jim,
broadcast
you,
now.
You have you sell products in your clinic. Can you share something about that on terms of an appropriate commission?
For selling products?
Yeah.
I've tried the commission approach with the therapist, but there was really no interest. And I tried to implement that early on in our association, but there's really no interest in selling product. No interest
so
in making
in
a commission.
So in terms of the percentage rate, though, did you have a set percentage rate?
For selling a product?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. There was a 5% commission for selling products.
5%, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that was this question, is what would be an appropriate percentage, and that's what I've heard, everything from 5 to upward of 10 or 15%.
Well, I think that the fair percent of commission is for, you know, doing treatments. That's what that question's regarding, I believe.
Hmm. Well, I thought maybe I misunderstood the question. I thought that the question was, what is the fair percentage of commission for employees? So was that for sales of products?
I suspect it's for doing work, actually doing treatments.
Oh, I see. Okay.
That's what I suspect.
Well, an employee can be paid, usually they're paid an hourly rate, but they can be paid based on piecework as well. So if what I'm gathering from the statistics I've seen in both Canada and the U.S., looking at both the franchises as well as the government websites which figure out an hourly rate, it seems like around $18, $19 an hour is what employees would be making. Now, of course, there's benefits above that. There's the benefits they would be getting in terms of money toward employment insurance and pension plans, health care benefits as well. So a fair percentage or flat rate would probably be around 18 or 19% plus those other benefits, and then you would have incentives on top of that for therapists that perhaps, for example, maintained an 80% retention rate or an 80% booking rate where they kept themselves busy, they worked hard to retain the people they're working with. Those people could be paid a higher rate than individuals who were not producing as much. So I'm sorry if I didn't understand the question initially. I thought it was percentage or commission on sales of product, but I see where you're going, that that employee can be paid. Usually they're paid a flat rate with bonus opportunities or incentives in place, but they can also be paid piecework as well.
Okay. And that question was from Maziek in Birmingham. Mm-hmm. Now, Don, we've been on this broadcast now close to 50 minutes, so I'm just going to ask you one last question from myself, and
sure.
Then I believe we're going to have to close it off. So you're proposing an entirely different approach. So how can a business owner present this idea to an prospective employee? And then also, as a corollary, how can people acquire this program?
Okay, well, your first question, in terms of the different approach, yes, looking at things as an employer-employee model is a different approach, but I believe it's a rapidly changing approach And there's an urgent need to look at that because as the franchises are growing, very prolific in the United States, now coming into Canada and the larger spas, we're going to see a lot more therapists who are employees as opposed to practitioners. So I would suggest that listeners could go to my website, MT Coach, that's MT as in massage therapist, coach.com. And I've posted a number of industry statistics on what's happening in the spa industry and franchises and income levels for massage therapists. We talk about a variety of those things. So use those statistics to explain to your practitioners who may not be up on this information what's going on in the industry. Have them read through it. Have them look at it so that when you're discussing things, it's much easier if you're both on the same page. Then they can really compare apples to apples when they're making a decision about whether they want to be a contractor or they want to be an employee and how this all might work. When you're presenting a prospective employee a position, you really do have to sell your opportunity on the benefits and on the comparative information you can provide. Because, again, we're fighting a lot of misconceptions. There's been a lot of bad information out there that has resulted in a lot of broken agreements, a lot of transient therapists, and a lot of the clinic owners who have amassed a tremendous amount of debt by taking on all of this risk and not getting a return on investment. So you're going to be fighting a lot of bad information, but if you get the accounting straight, if you get the industry statistics straight, and you're clear on your values, then I would suggest you just keep pitching it until you're going to find people, especially in this new climate, where it's going to be harder to work for yourself, you're going to be finding more practitioners who are more than happy to take up the opportunity you're offering them because they haven't been able to make a go of it on their own, and they perhaps don't want to work in one of the spas or massage franchises that exist. So you've got some advantage there, but it's going to take some selling, it's going to take some convincing because, again, we've had a despicable amount of poor information in our profession that has really crippled a lot of working relationships. In terms of acquiring this program, I'm in the editing process. We've got about 70% of the material done. I've just been working with the material, trying to figure out how we can build on the original volume of Better Business Agreements and present an entirely different perspective in this volume. So I'm hoping that we'll have it by the end of March this year. But people can go to mtcoach.com, sign up for our newsletter, and there will be ongoing postings as to when the program will actually be available. This program will include examples of employer-employee contracts, an employee handbook, which is very handy to have, and a number of the required policies and procedures practitioners will need to go through in order to become an employer or an employee. Both clinic owners and the practitioners will benefit from reviewing this material. It's not just for clinic owners. Really, as a practitioner out there, you really need to know what's involved in becoming an employee and weighing your current and prospective options. So you can just keep in touch with mtcoach.com, and we will announce the official launch date.
Thank you very much, Don. And for all our listeners, thank you very much for joining in. Now, please send us your feedback, and you can even still send us your questions. If you go to the broadcast page, you can just click on the box saying Even Better Business Agreements for MTs, and that'll take you to mtcoach.com, and you can send Don an email, and he will be glad to respond to you as quickly as he can. And I would like to remind people that if you go to massagetherapyradio.com, you can visit this page and just play the replay. Don, do you have any final remarks before we sign right off?
Jim, I just want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about this tonight. I'm very excited about this topic. It's really developed over the years since I wrote the original book. It's become quite clear to me that this is something that massage therapists have to start looking at as an employer-employee relationship for the benefit of both the clinic owner and the practitioner. So I'm just very happy to be here, and I appreciate your time tonight.
Well, it was great to have you here, and this is a very delicate topic, and everyone in the industry has a concern and an interest. So I think it's very timely, and I think it's going to be rewarding for everyone that pays attention to what you have to say. So thank you very much for being here, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for attending, and I wish you all a good night.